Make no mistake, if you're an author, you're an entrepreneur. You're selling the world on your book, aren't you? Of course, it's not as easy as launching a business and then tossing any old book up on Amazon. That's why I help entrepreneurs publish books on the specific topic and in the specific way that will launch or grow their businesses. Welcome to Entrepreneur Publishing Academy with your professor, Anna David. Well, hello there. You're listening to Entrepreneur Publishing Academy with your host and professor, your esteemed professor, Dr. Anna David. She is a doctor in how authors can build businesses from their book. Yeah, and leave a legacy. And this is a new series that I'm doing, and this is what I'm calling my bridge book series. I made that up. It is basically the word I'm making up for when you take pre-existing content and you make it into a book. It didn't sound that great to say, this is my series on turning pre-existing content into a book. So bridge book. And this first one in the series is all about turning a newsletter into a book. And my guest today is a dear friend of mine named Jeff Kober, and he's a terribly successful actor. He's been on Walking Dead, Sons of Anarchy, CSI, Law and Order, Criminal Minds, all those shows about psychos, and he often plays one. But in his other life, he is a meditation teacher and an absolutely brilliant writer who has been writing something he calls his daily thoughts that he's been sending out since 2011. I have been reading it every morning since I discovered it, which was probably, I don't know, let's say 2013. And I have been begging him to turn this into a book. And finally, he has listened. And you can go get that book. And it's called Embracing Bliss, 108 Daily Meditations. But in this episode, I get him to break down the process for turning a newsletter into a book. It involved a spreadsheet. It involved all sorts of stuff I would never have imagined. That's why you have to listen to this episode. And if you would like the show notes and links to the episode, links to where you can get that book, which, by the way, I went and bought a bunch of copies because I'm going to give it to everyone I know. Go to legacylaunchpadpub.com/blog/Kober. That's K-O-B-E-R. And now I give you Jeff Kober.
Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Anna.
I was just telling you, but I think the listeners need to know also, that I'm not just having you on here because I adore you. I'm having you on here because what you're going to share is going to be so useful for me and the people listening. No pressure.
No pressure. I'll try to remember what I've done.
So what we are talking about is, you taking this newsletter. It feels almost wrong to call it a newsletter, frankly.
Yeah, I called it a daily thought.
You've always called it a daily thought, but that doesn't exactly describe. So if you say I have a daily thought, that doesn't say I send you an email.
No, it doesn't. It started out just with me and like 12 people who, I teach meditation, and one of the most important things to me to help change my experience of life, in addition to meditating, is thinking something different on a daily basis. Right. Putting one thought in there that's other than the ones that I've always had, which are basically, you suck, you should die, or some version of that. Sure. And so I've started, and I was reading so much and listening to so much, I thought, if one of these thoughts that I'm reading about or thinking about myself strikes me, then it should be helpful for someone else. So I started sending it out to people that I had taught to meditate. And
I did not know that. So when was this? Do you know the month and year?
It was in February of 2011, I think. My wife, Adele, had decided to do a poem a day for a year. And she began in January. And I thought, well, I could do that too with this other thing that I'm doing. So I did that.
So And how did you start gaining subscribers?
Word of mouth, teaching people to meditate, and then they would send it on to someone else. And, you know, every once in a while I would strike a chord, and people would think, oh, you know, my son, daughter, mother, father, brother, sister needs to hear this, and send it on.
And, you know, I don't think I'm saying anything insulting or surprising when I say you are not a great marketer. Can we agree?
Understatement of the podcast, I'm sure. I'm the worst. I'm the worst marketer.
Yeah. So you have this, I mean, truly this gift to the universe. And there are all these people who, bless their hearts, may not have gifts to the universe, who are getting their message all over, preaching it from the rooftop. So can you talk a little bit about trying to share this very important thing and, let's say, struggling with the marketing aspect of it?
Well, I don't really struggle with the marketing aspect of it. I just ignore the marketing aspect of it.
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
Yeah. And it's because, we're all born with our particular gifts and our particular shortcomings. And there's something in the connection of selling oneself and ego that is broken in me. And I can't really engage in the one without triggering something in the other that is really uncomfortable for me. So I just kind of ignore it.
That's fascinating. Meaning, do you think it would be, quote, I know you'd probably don't believe in good and bad, but it would be, quote unquote, bad for you?
It would be, it's a level of dishonesty, it feels like, inside of me. You know, the thing that I, like I'm an actor, and the thing that makes me, to the extent that I am a good actor, that makes me a good actor is that I cannot stomach bullshit in myself. And so if I'm selling myself, then there's some, it feels like there's some level of bullshit in that. Mm-hmm. And so it makes me, it gives me a rash.
And I'm just asking, what about if you thought of it as a service work?
That works. That works. And that's what I had to, you know, one of the things that I did in putting out this book was to, you know, ask people to read it in previews and then put in a review on Amazon. And I got at least one very nasty email from someone. I thought you were different. I didn't think you were, you know, selling yourself. And I went, I asked you to buy an electronic copy for 99 cents. And if you think that's a big ask, then don't bother. Just assume that you got a book for free, and I don't need anything from you. So God bless. But it was like, even that was like, it was so strange to get that kind of an email, and I had to speak to it. So,
well, especially because the process, which I've talked about a lot in this podcast, is asking people if they want to participate in this.
Yes, 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 yes.
Not, you know, so, okay. So you have this email. It feels crass to ask you, but how many people subscribe-ish are you open to saying?
Yeah, something like, you know, between 5,000 and 6,000.
Okay. Yeah. And your open rates, which you probably don't check, are probably pretty great.
They're pretty good. They're oftentimes like 60-70%.
Which is unheard of, frankly. And as, I'm trying to think when I subscribed, probably, I have no idea, but from the day I subscribed, I have never not opened it. And as you know, I got on your case about not sending it early enough at one point.
And I changed it from 6 a.m. to 5 a.m. for you. And then you shift your schedule again, so you don't even need it at 5 a.m.
I don't need it at 5 a.m., but you know, very occasionally you have days where it doesn't come. It happens, I want to say 3 weeks ago, there was a day where it went late and it screwed me up. Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I It was, I just did three acting jobs that were trying to occupy the same space. And so I flew to Minnesota twice and Albuquerque once over the course of a week. And somewhere in there, I set it up the night before and didn't hit the right button. Yep. So then I look at my phone sometime in the morning and go, oops. And I say, Anna's going to be mad. And
that's what it added insult to injury, because it came later. Like, if it hadn't come at all, like, that would have been kind of almost better. But anyway, so
wait, it interrupted your flow. You had to stop. And
no, I will. This is what I'm going to be honest with you. If it doesn't come then, I do not read it.
You don't read it. Yeah.
Nope. My process.
I understand.
And so then what I'll say is, well, I wonder if Jeff's off cycle, so I should not delete it. I should save it until tomorrow, because what if he doesn't send one tomorrow? Like, this is how addicted I would even say I am to this email. So I started to get on your case probably 2.5 years ago. And I said, Jeff, I need this to be a book. And what did you say?
I don't know. What did I say?
I think you said, sure. And you were very interested in traditional publishing. And I said, please don't do that. I don't want to wait that long.
Yeah. And my friend, Light Watkins said the same thing. Do not engage in, traditional publishing.
And Light Watkins did engage in traditional publishing. So he knows.
Yeah. He's done it a couple times and with different publishers each time. And it was not a great experience for him.
No. Help me about this process. Once you committed to doing it, how did you figure it out? How did you organize? How did you decide what was going in?
The deciding of what was going in was, that was the biggest job, was to go through and find the ones that really resonated for me and that I felt were well written. And then I rewrote them all as well, because over the course of 11 years, you become a better writer, whether you want to or not. And whereas I used to take a paragraph to say a sentence worth of smart, 11 years ago, now I cut the whole paragraph and included in the next line, and so I was like slash a lot. Also I had to look at it in terms of, once I was going to put it out as a book, there were a lot of people that I had quoted that I couldn't get permission from. I did get permission for all of Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj's quotes and all of Sri M's quotes, all the Shris came through for me.
Wait, Jeff, you're kind of breaking up. I wonder why.
Oh, because I was playing with my cord.
Oh, stop doing that.
Stop doing that.
No, you're still breaking
nervous,
up.
You make me nervous, Anna.
I know.
Oh, I am? Wait, yeah. What? Why?
Okay, that's so much better. I think that's
so much better.
That's so much better.
Okay.
Sorry, listeners. If I was more organized, I would cut this part out, but I'm not doing that. Moving that helps a little bit, I think.
But
you don't need permission to put somebody's quote in your book. You believe in getting it.
I believe in getting it. I was under the understanding that I do need, you don't? Why didn't I talk to you earlier?
We talked about this book a lot. I mean, you're so honorable that I can see why you would want to do that. Oh my God, no. I mean, plenty of books have a quote at the beginning where I'll tell you a personal anecdote, which is crazy because it happened this week. On Sunday night, I was reading a book in the bathtub and it was talking about Chris Voss. And it said, Chris Voss said in this podcast interview, and it was a section. And I go, that sounds really familiar. Then on the next page, it says, he also went on in this podcast to say, and I'm like, that's my podcast. And I went back and I looked at the transcript and I realized it was directly lifted. So I get this guy's email address and I write him and I say, and I'm kind of calm, but I just go, listen, this is a book all about supporting writers. Why would you do that and not identify me? And Then I tell my friend who had recommended the book, and he goes, oh my God, what page is that on? I go to look at the bottom of the page, and there's this footnote and says, this is from Anna David's brilliant interview with Chris Voss on her podcast. And I'm like, oh my God. I email the guy again. I say, I'm so sorry. I didn't read the footnote. I have not heard back. So I do think if you put the person's name, I think it would have been better had he reached out mm-hmm. and told
yeah,
me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there was nothing wrong. And there was nothing I could do, even if he hadn't identified me. Public property at this point.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, so volume
wasted
2.
Some time.
Yeah. But it was nice because some of the quotes that I took away from, because I usually use a quote to get me started, just something that, you know, and in the beginning it was because, well, you will trust Deepak Chopra, you don't have any reason to trust me. Here's what Deepak says. And then I rattle on about that for a while. Also, in putting out a book, I wanted to have it more from me than from Deepak Chopra.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I have a different perspective than Deepak Chopra has. And that's what I wanted to present.
Well, and also what's nice is that you got to honor these people by saying, I'm putting you in this book. So letting them know is pretty nice.
Yeah. It's writers eat it so much. I had a movie produced a couple of years ago that I wrote, and I got to have the experience of being the writer on the set.
Yeah.
You have no respect whatsoever. It's like, and here's Jeff, the writer. Oh, and nice to meet you. And they're looking over your shoulder already to see who else is there, you know, like a mm-hmm. bad cocktail party scene.
And it doesn't exist without the writer.
It doesn't. And you know, writers toil in obscurity and in their loneliness. You have to be alone to write. And then you put it out there and, you know, a few people notice. You've got to be acknowledged somewhere, yeah. Right? So I'm glad that I couldn't ask. I think I quoted Yeats, didn't ask him.
I did some
public domain, you know.
You didn't go to the gravesite?
I actually did, but it was before I wrote the book.
So. There you go. So you picked 108 and not 365, as I had said, please, I need a year's worth. But 108 is a very important number.
I picked about 150. And then I had my associate and dear friend Diana Charkalis, and I, you know, picked our favorites, and then the ones that we both picked, those were, you know, in, and then the other ones we picked and chose as we went forward and allowed it to take a shape, and the shape that came into being was one where there were. Truths that seem to be universal, that resonate for me, interspersed with personal stories about my experiences of these truths or of their opposites. And, it, you know, because when I hear someone tell a story about themselves, it hits me at a much deeper level than if you're just telling me something that you learned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. Show don't tell. It's the self-help version of show don't tell.
Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of took a natural shape from that. And yes, we winnowed it down to 108 because frankly, 365 was just overwhelming. I couldn't deal with 365. Plus, mine aren't necessarily pithy and able to go into a 3x5 book or whatever those are. 4x5. Sometimes I'm a bit long-winded, so I didn't have like the Hazelden sort of model.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I thought 108, because it's a powerful number in the Vedic worldview, and because that felt like something I could get my hands around. And even with 108, it came out, it's like 220 pages or something, 225. Mm-hmm. That would have been a massive book if I'd put, you know, 365 in there.
I should mention at this point, I do not have my hands on it, which is absolutely tragic. I pre-ordered and then it got delayed. Amazon sometimes is not terrific. So I have copies coming. And so, you know, my whole point about getting on your case about this was that I hate the fact that I have to get on my phone in order to access my spirituality, because my non-spirituality leaks in. That is, so once my copy comes, Jeff, my new thing that I want to do is leave all internet off till noon. I want to see if I can do that.
Right on.
Yeah. But I got so desperate a few years ago that I started I printed all of yours and then I put them in a binder and I did it. For a month, I was able to stay off the internet until noon. And it was great. It was great. Writers. Ooh, was that good for my writing?
Wow. I like that.
So, okay. So you and Diana, you picked an associate, you know, someone who works with you and knows you well to just help decide, which I think is a really good idea. Did you get an editor in addition?
I did. Well, a copy editor, Trudy Roth, this is what she does for a living. And she's also a student of mine. Both of these people are also teachers of meditation that, whom I have trained. Mm-hmm. They know the way I think. They know the knowledge base, that I, you know, teach from their own perspective. And so they were able to, you know, and the thing is, I don't care how many times you go over your own work, there are things you just can't see. You have blind spots and you need someone to point out where you've used the same word too many times and where you've said the same thing twice. And
yeah.
And that also helped with, you know, when I asked people to read the book beforehand, I asked them to send in their editorial ideas. And there were a couple of them that were just really helpful, because there was one story that I told twice. And I'd only used one of the tellings in the book, but this person wrote in and said, you know, you told the same story in November and it was much better. And I looked back and went, oh, it is much better. So then I put the two of them together, because they both had strong aspects that I was able to bring together.
You're in a very unique position to have readers who knew your work so well.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I will read books all the time, memoirs usually, where somebody repeats an anecdote 5 pages later. And I'm like, how could an editor have not caught that?
Right.
All the time.
Right. Well, and a lot of the editing is, you can see, is just done by spell check, because it's the right spelling for a homonym, but not right for the word that they were going to use there. Yeah.
So, and then the cover, I was part of that selection process.
And I've gotten lots of, well, at least some flack about the cover.
Why?
Because it's not traditional, and because it's, it doesn't, you know, if you look at the top 10 books in the self-help section, they're all different than that. And they're, you know, they're designed and they're, I didn't care. I just didn't care.
Well, I put you in touch with our cover designer and you kind of were like, eh. And you were a great photographer. You wanted one of your photographs on the front.
I just did. I may have been wrong, you know, in terms of sales. I mean, it does make you have to look twice, because there's a person on the cover who is not the author of the book.
Yes. I mean, so you showed me 5 or 6 photos and I kept saying, these The problem is a photo of someone meditating and experiencing bliss does not look like a person who is blissful.
Although the one that I ended up with is
exactly
the blissful one. And yeah. So thank you for that. Yes.
And the amazing thing about publishing today is we could change it. You could experiment with a different cover.
That's right. The second edition.
The second edition. And so you got it together. You had somebody else managing the advanced reader team. I haven't checked lately, but you probably have hundreds of reviews.
I didn't look. Yeah. Is that something I'm supposed to do?
Well, I'm going to look while we're talking, because I think it's pretty awesome, you know, to see.
You know, I'm an actor, and there are actors who want to watch what they've done to see if they got what they wanted in there. I'm not that guy, because it makes me self-conscious.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't want to, you know, relish the good reviews or nitpick the so-so reviews.
Should I tell you that there's 135 star reviews?
That's nice, right? That works.
Pretty amazing. Have almost never heard of it. Alas, my blurb is not listed on the Amazon page. We'll have to discuss that later / change that for the new edition. Kidding. I also wanted to, what did I want to point out? Yeah, Jeff, this is damn good. One of the issues that I'm still noting is that in your daily newsletter, you're not mentioning that the paperback is out yet. Please update.
There's a link to buy
it. A link that says the ebook and Kindle version is available.
Tomorrow it's going to be so different.
I know your newsletter better than you do. And so what was it like? What is it like to put that out there? Is it massively uncomfortable?
No, because it made me very aware of every idea, every word, because you have to stand behind it if you're publishing it. If you're putting it out there, you're saying, this is from me. This is my representation I'm putting out into the world. And if you have a problem with it, please come to me. So there's this really interesting thing, and I don't know what this is psychologically, but there are certain places where I had said something or told some story, and I wondered if someone would be uncomfortable with it. I wondered if someone wouldn't like it. And then I realized, and then I changed those, and I went, it was me. I was the one who was uncomfortable with it. I didn't like it, but I was projecting that out onto someone, some imagined third party. And so I changed those. I stand behind everything that's in the book. And I think it's a really good product. And I think that anyone reading it is going to learn something and is going to be able to change their mood at least a bit.
Absolutely.
By dipping into it. And that's everything. That's the whole reason it exists. So.
Well, the day the book went out there and you knew people were reading it was no different than the day before for you.
Pretty much. Yeah. Cause I got
a lot of going on, you know? Yeah.
Right now I'm putting together the podcast version of it. So that's going to be fun. And I'm going to be doing daily thoughts from the book, but I'm also extrapolating on them. I'm going to probably, you know, start, you know, interviewing people like you and talk about your spiritual journey
I'm so proud of you, Jeff. That. I'm so happy you're doing
that. Oh, God bless you.
That.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, all that I want, and I mean this isn't for you, this is for the world. There is no writer that has changed my life, or no writer I have read as much as I have read you. simply because I do it every day. There's no other writer I read every day.
Right.
And I think that, you know, this is not what I would call a booktervention, but I think you owe it to the world to share it with as many people as you can. That's
I'm trying. Yeah. I'm trying.
I see it. You said yes to me to doing this.
I did. I say yes to you almost always.
That's kind of true. So what advice would you give to somebody who has a newsletter and they think they want to make it into a book?
I think that the first thing that has to happen is to take a step back and ask oneself, what is the through line? What is the story being told here? What is the path from beginning to end? What is the process being engaged in that one is teaching about? You know, I learned something early on in my studies that whatever it is that we are offering, we're always teaching consciousness. And, you know, what I teach a lot about is the art of flow, finding the way of aligning oneself with what's going on and then allowing oneself to flow, because we're not smart enough to know how to do something new. We can set ourselves up to have an experience that is new by setting the bumpers and the boundaries and the paradigm we're teaching through. But we're always teaching a state of consciousness. So what state of consciousness are you teaching? What are you offering to people? And then being willing to live in the question of that rather than find the answer to that. And then begin to say, just look at which of the pieces that you've written really resonated for you and that really resonated for others. Mm-hmm. You know, like, for example, whenever I write about romance or love or partnership, those are the ones that people relate to. That, you know, that's where people really have issues, you know, and death. Death and romance. These are the ones. So I had to look at, you know, and incorporate, you know, several of those in the piece. So those were no-brainers. And I was able to, you know, put some of them together where I said similar things and those are also the ones that I've had the most experience with. You know, I've had a lot of death in my life, and I've dabbled in the area of romance, as one does, and I've learned, you know, what works and what doesn't. I've learned where I've gone south and where I've, stayed on the beam, as they say, you know. And so those were the ones that just like, okay, those are in there. Now we're going to scatter them around, and now what are we going to fill in? And then, you know, but then allow oneself to be guided by some organizing principle that you maybe can't put into words. You know, allow yourself to pick the ones that resonate for you, and then have a second set of eyes look at them. You know, or do the same thing, and like Diana and I did, which was we both came up with our favorites, and then she's really good with spreadsheets. So I appreciate spreadsheets.
How you did it. So you named each one. Well, it has a title.
Yeah. So there were the title of each one, mine, title of each one, hers. Then which ones were this, you know, came together. And then, you know, my picks, but not her picks, and her picks and not my picks. And then just like, okay, we need another one here. Okay, grab that one. And oh, how does that one fit? And, you know, put them in.
I had no idea.
That was fun, actually.
Yeah. It's like science meets spirituality. I mean, science, whatever, math. I don't know what you call a spreadsheet, except confusing to me. Were you going to say more about that process? Because I was going to tell you, do you want to know, out of every single one, the idea that sticks with me, so it better be in the book, I bet it is that one where you talk about the same brain that can get you from the valley to La Cienega is not the same brain where you can figure out your feelings. That's the one I think about, not every day, every week at least. That one got in there, right?
Yeah, well, that idea is in there. Yeah. The idea that it's this book, Mindfulness, by Mark Williams and Danny Penman. They're the ones who really talk brilliantly about that. And it says that the intellect is a problem solving tool. And it shows you where you are and where you want to be, and then shows you what problems need to be solved to make where you are and where you want it to be the same place. And when we put our happiness in that, when we try to figure out our happiness or lack of happiness, all we're doing is showing ourselves that we're not happy.
Right.
And then the mind comes up with all the reasons we're not happy. And they're all things that we can't change.
That are horrible. You know, the horrible things.
Usually horrible. You know, you're too old, you're too fat, you're too ugly, you're too whatever it says, you know.
Well, we have to wrap up. And I wanted to wrap up again with a little bit of a booktervention thing, which is one of the principles that is throughout every single one of the thoughts I've ever read from you is that life is about getting comfortable with discomfort. Would you say that's true?
Absolutely. And because, you know, and this is not my truth. It's in the Upanishads. There's a saying that which is good is not necessarily pleasant, and that which is pleasant is not necessarily good. It can be, but it's not necessarily. So if I am organizing my life around being comfortable, I am by definition going to miss out on some really great opportunities for growth. Growth is by definition uncomfortable because we're moving into the unknown. And the unknown is always uncomfortable because it threatens our survival. It threatens us on a meat basis, on a nervous system basis. And we're not about growing our nervous system. We're about growing our consciousness. So that which grows the consciousness might be uncomfortable for the nervous system. And one of the main reasons of meditation is to be able to identify with consciousness rather than the nervous system, so that we can allow the nervous system go through what it needs to go through in order for us to grow in consciousness.
So I'm going to end with the point that perhaps it is time to walk through that discomfort so that you can get out of what's comfortable, so that you can grow in consciousness and share this book more.
Which is what I'm doing here with you today, Anna.
Live spiritual growth in action. So if people would like to get this book and find out more about you, where's the best place for them to go?
They can, I don't have it on my website yet. I have to do that. I'm going to, that's what I'm going to do with the rest of my day. They can go to, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Powell's Books and search for Embracing Bliss by Jeff Kober, which is, sober with a K. My website is jeffkober.com and there's going to be a page on there. The landing page is going to be so much about this book now.
Thank you. Seriously, though, Jeff, thank you for doing this. Y'all, thank you for listening. Please go get this book. I'll talk to you guys next week.
Uh-huh. Thanks for joining me this week on Entrepreneur Publishing Academy with Anna David. For more info about the show, go to entrepreneurpublishing.academy. where you can get links to show notes and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, and all the other places. Speaking of those places, if you got anything out of this show, I can't tell you how much I'd appreciate a rating on iTunes. And please, don't forget you can tell an author or entrepreneur friend about the show. Another forget-me-not, my company Legacy Launchpad Publishing is available to help industry leaders and those with stories to share at any stage in their publishing journeys, whether that's writing, editing, or publishing. Just go to legacylaunchpadpub.com to find out more. And be sure to tune in next week for next week's episode. You know, if you subscribe, you never have to worry about missing one.